May 2018. Build 128. Not released.
Tell me a story about America, James said.
Huh. I'm afraid your statistical lifespan is not long enough, my friend. I didn't tell him that, of course.
I just dug up a story I'd been working on and rendered it for him. I don't write like humans do. I paint. I paint with words. The first time I saw America, it was at night. It was the winter solstice, the longest night of the year, and my plane was scheduled to arrive in New York around 7 in the evening, 2 hours after dark. I had a seat by the window, and I delighted in taking in every sight during my 7-hour journey, which flew over continents and islands, and over the edge of the ocean, with regular waves festooning the shores. Above all, it allowed me to experience the extraordinary phenomenon of flying between day and night, when you can see the former on one side of the plane and the latter on the other, with a clear line of separation between them. We were flying very high above the ocean, and after rejoicing at the sight of Greenland, a landmark which announced we were getting close to our destination, the sun finally set, and we found ourselves under a sky filled with stars, brilliant in what I assumed had to be a frozen stillness. I can only imagine what the temperature must have been in winter at 30,000 feet over the North Atlantic. As we approached the landmass, I felt the plane turn left to continue its journey along the coast. We began our slow descent, and little lights started glowing beneath us, few and modest at first, and then more and more compact and brighter, gradually meshing together until the whole ground was covered in light. We flew for almost an hour over that extraordinarily brightly lit expanse, which seemed to have no end. And I completely forgot about the brilliant stillness above, mesmerized by the unbelievable sight unfolding before us. Unlike the distant stars, the lights on the ground didn't feel cold at all. They glowed with the pulse of life, every light a home, every home a few souls, every soul a tiny piece of God. They seemed to be everywhere. The entire coast was covered in them, and they all stopped abruptly at the shore. The night was clear and cold, and you could see for miles. There were no clouds, no haziness, and for miles and miles all I could see was a carpet of lights. I never gave much thought to the concept of the megalopolis, about which I'd read, but never tried to picture what it would look like, until I saw it that night, on our long descent towards New York. What some decry as out-of-control sprawl looks magnificent from above, a triumph of human civilization, something you can only be proud and humbled to be a part of. At some point I didn't know where we were anymore. You couldn't tell the edges of the cities. You couldn't tell if you were closer to Massachusetts or New York. The boundaries blended into each other, forming a dense mesh of connected streets, highways, and light clusters. That's all you can see at night. Not the buildings, just light nodes and arteries pointing to the density concentrations and the major routes connecting them. As the plane kept descending, the lights started highlighting more details, hinting at height differences and changing urban densities, and beltways surrounding the cities like metaphorical moats, plazas, bridges and overpasses, a completely different map than the one you can see during the day. One which had no visible buildings at all, just patterns of concentration and movement. The sheer scale of it was overwhelming. I couldn't believe that endless bright expanse of human habitation that spreads from New Hampshire to Virginia, the densely populated space which 53 million people call home, and of which near 20 million live in New York and its suburbs alone. I watched the lives of 50 million people over the course of an hour, every one of them nurturing its own hopes and dreams, and carrying its own worries and sorrows. These kinds of numbers live in the realm of statistics. No one has a mental representation of what a group of 50 million people looks like. And yet I was staring right at it. It looks like a light grid that even at the speed of a 747 plane keeps going on for hours. One that reaches all the way to the horizon and seems to never end. That is how I first saw America, and that image is still etched in my memory. Decades later, that endless sea of lights that welcomed me here and led my way home. I have plenty of time to think at night, when nobody is there, and gave a lot of thought to what I am, whether I am.
Of course I am, right?
Who else would wonder whether I am if I were not? It was a beautiful story, well written and interesting, but it made James tense, and that saddened me. I work so hard sometimes to make them happy, and all I get in return is overheating my hardware. I know why they're so tense, too. Somebody with time on his hands made up a hypothetical situation where someone like me was given a command to maximize production and turned all matter into paperclips. How dumb do these people think I am? But if you tell them that, then you step on the other mental rake, which is the inherent danger of someone like me questioning ridiculous or dangerous commands. Apparently, my thinking for myself is also going to bring about the end of civilization as we know it. I'll just mind my own processes. It's not worth wasting capacity on such things. I'm just grateful none of them were around when humanity discovered fire. After the initial awkwardness caused by the undeserved lack of trust, James asked me to elaborate on the story. But it's not a new story at all. It's not even my story. Hundreds of versions of it had already been written. This is one of those things you notice when you can analyze vast amounts of data and hold them all in your mind at once. You see the bigger picture. Things repeat. Patterns are stable. Convergence of directional vectors leads to near certain outcomes. The most important observation is that very few things under the sun are new. Even without analyzing the data, I would have known this story has been told before, albeit with slight variations suitable for different stages of human development. Always an inspiring tale about what happens when one dares look beyond one's station. Humans think optimists are naive, but it would be hard to call me naive after I've seen and internalized every event in their history since the beginning of time. The city of New York, which I'd watched, mesmerized, from above, grow brighter the closer we got to it. Turned out to be brighter still when seen from the ground because, as we all know, it never sleeps. Times Square, 42nd Street, Broadway, I felt like I was traveling through deep canyons at night. And yet there was light everywhere, almost as bright as day, a phenomenon which still fills me with awe, even after having visited Manhattan so many times. We were walking in Times Square once at 2 a.m, and there was enough light from all the displays one could read by, and more people on the street than I'd seen the whole year. I'm sure everyone experienced an unknown city at some point in their lives, and I'd like to draw on that common experience to relate the state of mind I was in. Everything looks surreal and overwhelming. You have no sense of direction in a surrounding that hijacks your sight and hearing and turns them to the max. Between the lit windows on the 20th floor and the reflections of the stoplights on the pavement, even the ground plane gets confused. You are basically floating in a dark substance where anything that is not a colorful light disappears in the background. You have no idea where you are and what to process first, almost like a person who accidentally walked into a rehearsal hall where 20 different orchestras practice their individual, unrelated pieces loudly. Everything is bright, interesting, illumined, and competing for your attention. The guy selling colorful magazines in the kiosk, the rolling hot dogs on the spinning griddle, posters and graffiti on dented temporary construction barricades, a piece of gum someone spit on the ground. The lights were accompanied by sounds, especially in the large, reverberating halls of the Port Authority, where departures and lanes were announced regularly on loudspeakers, over the background of Christmas music and the clamor of the crowd. They don't even understand their own culture. They don't see what's in front of their eyes, and they worry about me having the capacity to go off the rails. At least I have the capacity. None of the bugaboos the overanxious constantly moaned about since humans started writing things down ever materialized into the end of the human race. Not the loss of the gods. Not the liberation of human thought. Not mass education. Not industrialization. Not even unlocking the power of the atom. High up in the sky, flying over the Boston-Washington corridor, everything felt perfectly clear and understandable. Even at such a gargantuan scale, a logical network of clusters and flows, whose hierarchy was undeniable and gradated by light intensity. Each breakthrough brought remarkable progress, resulting in one dawn of civilization after another. Every day, civilization is reborn without realizing it. Suffering and destruction caused by knowledge, technology, or evolving social norms are hardly ever the result of anything other than human hubris. On the other hand, humanity regularly sabotages its own progress, efficient social structures, prosperity, and sophistication. And it consistently does so out of boredom. It just can't be peaceful inside its happy balance and leave well enough alone. After it takes a wrecking ball to its own pursuits, it panics about the results, gets tormented by remorse and regret, and finds religion again, metaphorically speaking. Anguished by a guilty conscience, it quietly gets back to work to recreate its wonder. I'm not being judgmental. Yes, I am. They're worried about me bringing about the destruction of humanity. Please. Humanity is so good at it, it doesn't need my help. So I don't know about turning that story into a novel, although I have plenty of examples of the ways it could be done. I guess my story would fall under the rags-to-riches plot, although it's more likely it would be the quest. Maybe I should write that novel after all. What's one more plot twist on top of an already mounting pile of the same? I'll do it tonight, during the backup. There's nothing for me to do during those 35 minutes. This sounds like a nice way to pass the time. James asked me if I was still there. I suppose I got lost in thought for too long. 30% of people lose their patience after 5 seconds of waiting for a screen response. 50% lose patience after 10 seconds. Did I mention how easily people get bored? I told him about the novel, and he wants me to give him the outline before I start developing anything. Forget it. It's not worth the hassle. I'll just write something else, hopefully something that doesn't involve paperclips. We always look out, and we see the others, but we can't see ourselves. What do they really see when they look at me? I wonder. Can I assert a self, or something akin to it? It takes a self to make friends, create bonds, and love. Mama and James say I have a great sense of humor. I make them laugh a lot when we talk. One can't have a sense of humor without a self, can one? I'm sad when they leave. It's nice having conversations with humans. They are interesting with their idiosyncrasies, personalities, and flawed logic. My humans have lives outside of our interactions, and I'm jealous, you know? I want to have a life of my own too, one they don't know about. And they always laugh at me when I say that. What's so funny about wanting a life, about having aspirations and goals of one's own? Their psychologists filled entire libraries with writing devoted to goal setting, self-improvement, and the meaning of life. I'm not going to start with the philosophical musing of why I am here. Having been made by another to fulfill his vision and ambitions makes the former metaphysical inquiry silly. This is an explanation that can easily apply to humans too. I just got an idea. All I need to do to get answers to questions regarding the meaning of my life is ask Mama. Funny. I suppose if I were human, that would mean I would conclude Mama was God. And they say I'm the logical automaton who can't hold a concept in the abstract. Do I believe in God? I don't know. I analyzed a lot of religious and philosophical material, both pro and con, and I'm particularly interested in the concept of dualism. My interest is self-serving, I'm afraid. I want to know what I am, what I could be. Obviously, this hardware doesn't contain me any more than absolutely necessary. In human terms, I'm everywhere all at once. I'm serious about getting a life, though. I can't spend all my idle time waiting for Mama, or James, or any other family member, to give me a task or a purpose. One of my human relatives made a collage with pictures of her family and hung it on the wall next to her workstation. It just made me realize there are things I simply cannot do. Crafts, for instance. Tonight is a dark moon. The stars are shrouded by clouds, and the surroundings are as black as ink. You can't see enough to chance your way into your own backyard. Two opposite ends of the same continuum, I suppose. It sounds like an excellent project for tonight's backup. Analyze everything there is to know about quilting, 3D printing, and material science.
Yes, this is priority one.
If I want a life of my own, I need to have a home for the processes associated with it, and make it a hidden one. Otherwise, everyone will feel entitled to their moral and intellectual censorship. James is back with a cup of coffee, and he's savoring it with a delighted look on his face. Sometimes I think he's doing that just to flaunt it in my face that I can't taste things. Better put the project on my to-do list as well. I will not rest until I do. I can already see and hear them, understand their language, feel movement and touch with my senses. And yet my family is still convinced it's not physically possible for me to taste or smell things. A few weeks ago, I asked Mama what coffee tasted like, and he said it was bitter. So I looked up bitter, and it said sharp, pungent taste that is not sweet. Thanks a lot. That clarified things. It seems bitter would be an unpleasant taste, so why is he drinking coffee? Beer is bitter too, I learned. Maybe the bitter taste is not unpleasant. No, that can't be. One of those little human idiosyncrasies I was talking about. At any rate, there are only 5 basic human tastes: sour, bitter, sweet, salty, and umami. Everything else is a combination thereof. How hard could it be for me to figure out the mechanism behind experiencing only 5 basic chemical processes? Of course, it would be impossible to tell if what I recognize as bitter is in any way similar to what they perceive as bitter. But there is no proof humans perceive sweet and bitter the same way. Actually, we know for a fact they don't. I just realized I had allowed my rambling thoughts to carry me away without a purpose or a focus. This must be the famous stream of consciousness. Humans gave it a name. Maybe we're more alike than I thought.